Aloha, Mud Babies. It is I, your Tiki Leader, Steve Mudflap McGrew. Oh, we have got an interesting show today. And by that, I mean we've actually brought in a radio personality, somebody that knows how to do radio. Unlike what we do here at Remasculate, this man actually runs and produces a show for Angie Austin. And please welcome to the show, Moose.
Yay,
Moose. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Good. Thanks for doing the show here.
Oh, you know,
me.
You come on my show. It's only fair that I come on yours.
So where does the nickname Moose come from?
Well, as you can tell, I'm not a little fella.
But it's not like a moose.
Well, no. I joke, like, when people ask us to get a reaction out of them, I say, well, it's based on smell mainly. But no, my real name's Mike.
Well, then that would have been Bigfoot. If it was based on smell.
My real name's Mike, but sells like 2/3 of the world's population. Uh-huh. So going into elementary school, it was, you know, the most popular name for many decades. So everybody in the class was named Mike. And my middle name was Carl. And in my mind, that's an old man's name because that's my grandpa's name. And he was living with us. So I couldn't go by Carl because I would just cause confusion at home. And it was back when the resurgence of Life cereal, Hey Mikey, He Likes It. And I thought that kid was a jerk. So I did not want to go by Mikey. And just the nickname that my mom gave me. And everybody calls me Moose. My wife calls me Moose because my father-in-law, his name is Michael. So calling me Mike just would be weird.
Too many Mikes.
Right. And so the only person, surprisingly enough, who calls me Mike is my mother. But she was the one who initiated this nickname in the first place.
Is your real name Michael?
Yeah. That's when I know I'm in trouble.
Michael.
Yeah.
And how do you pronounce your last name?
Allstrand.
Allstrand.
When I was teaching English over in Europe, I had one of my students say, hey, do you know what your last name means? Because over in Scandinavia area, it's just as popular as Jones and Smith is here. I said, I don't know what it means. Well, I guess the AHL transfixed to the beginning of the word is something that means trashy. Like you put on a word that means trashy.
That is so you.
And strunt is a beach. So it translates into beach bum or driftwood.
Oh,
is what
so it not trashy beach?
No. Well, put it together, and it's beach bum or driftwood. So I trace it back far enough, and it comes from a tribe of gypsies. You better hold on to your watch, or I might take it.
It was not just one person who was a beach bum.
It was a whole bunch of driftwood beach bum people.
Right.
I guess that's why I can't keep my shoes on.
And so who was the first person to call you Moose?
Well, just kind of as how I introduced myself as a kid, and just I was always performing.
Pick the name then? You kind of picked it for yourself?
Yeah, just kind of, well, because we had a conversation as I remember being in first grade, and the teacher just getting frustrated and saying, Mike, what's the answer to number 7? And getting 6 wrong answers. So she's like, you know, we got to figure this out. And so there's one guy who's like, my mother named me Michael. I'd like you to call me Michael. So I'm like, okay, whatever, jerk. And then like one guy was Mike. Another one was Mikey. I'm like, oh, thank goodness I did not want to go by that. And another kid went by his last name. And so I'm like, okay, cool. And I'm like, well, I'll just go by Moose. Is that okay? And the teacher's like, why not? And I've been performing since I was 4. So in like all the programs and whatnot says Mike Moose Allstrand, and now DJing and in radio, it just kind of
sticks. Works. Yeah. It works for you. I mean, it's one of those things that totally fits.
Yeah, it's very brandable. I really like it. It helps out, in radio and other aspects too.
Yeah, like now, those that listen know that I have the nickname Mudflap from my radio days and stuff, and I've just it sticks to you because that's the name that you get on the air and people call you that.
Right.
But sometimes I don't actually feel like that's not my real name.
Well, my wife gets frustrated that my mother calls me Mike. She's like, you're not Mike. You're Moose. That's who you are. And it's like I refer to myself as Moose. That's how I introduce myself to people. And a lot of, like, especially the older people, well, it's like, I have a hard time calling you Moose. I had a client meeting the other day, and the guy was in almost 70. He's had a hard time. There's been people here at the station that for the first few months I worked here tried not using my name.
I can't say Moose.
Right. And so it's who I am. I'm not Mike. I'm Moose, and that's who I've been.
But it's Moose as in Moose, and not like for your hair.
Right, exactly. Like, I used to be in youth ministry, and one of the kids asked me, how do you spell Moose? And I'm like, come on, Weisenheimer, what's going on? So just to be a jerk back, I said, with 7 O's, and this is about 15 years ago.
Moose.
And I get, Christmas cards and emails from this guy even 15 years later, and he spells it with seven O's. Like, it's been this running gag. Yeah. And I, when I sign my name, I spell it with an exclamation point because nobody can just say moose. Like you just did.
Moose.
So I sign it, like, my initials. There's an M with an exclamation point. I sign everything moose, exclamation point. It's just something that stuck and just kind of is my signature move.
Now, here on the show, Remasculate.
Remasculate.
How would you describe, or what is your view on what it takes to be a man?
To be a man.
Man. How would you describe it, a man?
Well, I guess there's it's a big question, and there's different aspects of my life, because not only am I a radio guy, I'm also a husband and a father. And so there's different aspects to how I am a man in different places. Like, to my son, when he gets older, I have to teach him to be a man and how to, you know, be the leader of, you know, whatever family unit he might be in, and be able to lead spiritually and to be able to, you know, work hard, because, you know, you've been working since a young age. I have too. And just be able to provide. I guess that's one of the things that my dad always did, is he worked to provide. So that's one of
the
things.
You're the provider for the family.
Yes. And so then also my role as a man is to teach my daughter what she should look for in a man. What is a good man? Somebody who treats her nice, who will be treat her like the princess that I know she is.
You don't need her having father issues one day.
Right.
What you're
I'm having father issues. So, but yeah, it's a heavy question, but also to be a man, to love my wife like she is my queen. I refer to her as my bride, because she wasn't only just a bride on the day we got married. She is constantly my bride throughout life. And so they're just, and actually we're celebrating 9 years in a couple weeks.
Oh, how did you propose?
Oh, this is a cool story. This
is it?
All
right, cool.
I was working at a church at the time, and I got all the men on staff to let me video them of how they proposed. They told me their story, and they're in different settings. Like, I took one guy to McDonald's, and we're in a busy McDonald's restaurant area, and he's telling his story. And then I had my buddy who's a drummer, and he's like tuning his drum set, telling the story. And there's different areas. And then I put it all together, and the church I was working at, after service, we would all go upstairs and have a cafe and have dinner as a big body of people. And during the announcements of the church services, said, hey, make sure you come to the cafe. There's going to be a cool announcement. Make sure you all come. Because out of like the 300 people that would come to the service, maybe about 80 would stay for dinner.
Yeah.
But at this particular time,
a spaghetti dinner?
Oh, I think it was salad at the time. Like, you know, salad bar sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they said, hey, make sure you come to this big announcement. So there's 200 people came as opposed to the 80. And I told my wife, I said, hey, my buddy Jake, who ended up being the best man at our wedding, I said, he has his truck, his aunt needs to move a sofa. She lives right around the corner. My wife knew exactly where his aunt lived. I said, I'm going to go help him put this sofa in his truck. I'll be right back. And she said, okay. And I said, go through the line. But she didn't really realize that some friends that don't normally come to the service just happened to be there.
Hey, why is there more than 80 people?
Right, exactly. And she just didn't think about it. She's like, oh, I wonder what the big announcement is. And then she went to her normal table where she sits at, but my sister came. She's like, no, let's sit over here. And, you know, because it's away from the door, she's making up some excuse. And so my wife's, like, very confused. But she's not, you know, she doesn't have a clue at all.
Right. She's still following along.
And, when we were dating, she's like, I've always had this dream of somebody proposing to me at Thanksgiving. And I'm like, what? She's like, yeah, I had this dream since I was a little girl of, like, digging through my mashed potatoes and finding a ring. I'm like, well, that's just silly. But
thanks for the tip.
Right. But she knew that. We knew that we wanted to get married, and she was always saying, are you going to do a Thanksgiving? Are you going to do a Thanksgiving? I'm like, let me do my own thing. And I kept telling her I was going to do it between Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah.
But this is the beginning of November. This is like 2 weeks even before.
It's Thanksgiving enough.
Yeah, Thanksgiving enough. So I put together this video, and when I was helping move the couch is what I told her, I was actually putting on a tux with a bright pink tie, a black tux. It was very nice. And so they said, here's the special announcement. And they showed all these people propose. Like, she thought, okay, maybe it's going to be a video about a marriage conference or something. And it's like, you know, a pastor telling a story, other pastor, leader telling the story of how they proposed. And then the last segment of it was me. And I was in the back of the church. And I said, how I proposed to my wife was I put together a video of everybody at church telling how they proposed, showed it during dinner, and they came around the corner. And then she was eating her salad, and she was like, oh, there's moose up there. And then she slowly put together, he's not married. What is he talking about getting? And then she looks up and sees everybody staring at her.
At her.
And my wife is a very quiet, I don't want to be in the spotlight sort of person. And so she just like sunk in her chair and was like trying to dart around, trying to figure out which door I was coming through, because this area had like four doors. Just trying to figure out where I was coming from, and then I had a wireless microphone, and the lights came back on, and I said, Annabelle, with the with your father's blessing and with God and these people as my witness, I'd like to ask you to be my wife. And she was like bright red, embarrassed as all get out. And everybody starts cheering. And I'm trying to calm down the crowd. I'm like, she hasn't said anything yet.
She might say no.
But she said yes, and it was a good time. And we still have that DVD, and we watched it.
So you recorded the whole thing? Somebody was videotaping the whole...
No, not the whole the video of the that I showed of all the other pastors.
You didn't have somebody actually videotaping in the room?
Well, this was like a decade ago, so not a lot of people had video phones. I just didn't really think about it.
A decade ago? How old were you?
22.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. See, I've always been like, people that get married young, it's like leaving a good party at 9:30. You know, it's just, you just know it's kicking in.
Yeah. Well, I was moving to Atlanta, and I wanted to have her come with me, and so that's why we... got engaged. And
it's all been good ever since?
Well, not always good. I mean, with every relationship, it's had its highs and lows. And, you know, we're going strong now with our two kids. And just, you know, I just sent her a text earlier today. I said, I just want you to know that you're loved.
Oh.
So.
Oh. Now, in your years of doing radio, as most DJs do, you have to follow the job.
Right.
How many times have you been fired from a job or had to move on to a job?
Well, when I was going to school for this, I had an instructor tell me about their journey and how they got fired and said, you know, this is probably going to happen to you. So I go home and I told my wife, I said, within 5 years of me being in this industry, I'm going to get fired. I just want to let you know. And she's, I used to be in live performance and live tech. So that's why we moved to Atlanta. And she said, I'll follow you anywhere. Anywhere you get a job to provide for us, I'll follow you. And she's like, anywhere but Utah. I'm like, okay, whatever. But she's open to Utah now. But so she said that she would follow me anywhere. And I forgot where I was going with this. But she just has been a rock with that. And
were you fired within the first 5 years?
I was not fired. I was threatened to be fired. But like one of the jobs I had, one of the GMs said, we don't make enough money to have Moose on. If the sales doesn't meet quota by like this much money by this date, he's fired. And that happened like every 6 weeks for a year. And I just left. I waited till my
I can't take this anymore. I can't take this risk.
I just waited till my contract was up and my lease was up. I'm like, and let's just go back to Denver. And so that's why I'm here.
How many times have you moved?
Physically moved 12 times in the past 9 years.
So it's not actually for the job. You just move around. You just like, well, I'm tired of this apartment.
Well, you know, rent is crazy in different places, but there was a couple moves down in Denver due to some horrible neighbors and whatnot that were threatening our lives. So, of course, we had to move. That's a whole other story.
No, I want to hear it. I want to hear this.
Okay.
Is that something you can tell?
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody say their lives have been threatened by neighbors.
Gosh, this guy was horrible. We lived in Atlanta, lived on the third floor.
Uh-huh.
We had a tiny puppy.
With Luca?
No, not Luca.
Different song. I'm Luca. I live up on the
third. So we had a tiny puppy, and, you know, apartments, some of them are solid. Some of them you can, like, hear somebody whisper through the walls. Yeah. But this apartment was kind of...
You can hear a through the wall.
Well, this apartment was in the middle. It wasn't, like, you know, soundproof, but it wasn't, you know, cardboard walls.
Yeah.
But, this neighbor would, if my dog would start chasing his tail, he'd pound on the wall. And I'm like, what is your deal? And the dog is just stepping around. And like, if we happened to walk too heavy, he would pound on the wall. But this guy would have like a surround sound system and would watch action movies or have his music blaring. So there'd either be explosions and gunshots all day long or all the time. And it gave me like these stress headaches because there was never silence at my
house. Did you ever go knock on his door?
Oh,
and
several times.
Hey, could you turn it down?
Several times. And like, having it loud's fine. Just take the bass out or whatever. Just trying to compromise with this guy. And it just would escalate and escalate. And there was one time I was on a retreat and I wasn't even home. My wife comes to the door with groceries. One of the bags breaks and that bag just happens to be filled with canned foods. And so it falls on our tile and he just runs upstairs and starts yelling and swearing at her and just gets... It was uncalled for, you know, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Reacting like that was just silly. And so she felt very scared, slammed the door, called our buddy who lived like three blocks away, who was a retired cop. He came over and she called me and I was like 6 hours away. So there was no way I could help her. But it was just, you know, that's where it all started. And there was one time, I can't even remember what escalated it, but I was down at my car after talking to him. I knocked on his door, said something, left, walked down to my car. He comes racing down the stairs with a baseball bat.
After you?
After me. I get in my car, and I just peel out, and I go to a sporting goods store, and I buy mace. One for me and one for my wife. Just because I was attacked by this guy. But I wanted to get a restraining order, but I didn't know his last name. The apartment complex wouldn't give me his last name, and the cops were no help. So eventually, I called corporate of my apartment complex I was living at, and they eventually moved us to another side of the apartment complex because it was rather large.
Yeah.
And so then we lived there for 6 weeks before we decided that we needed to move back to Denver because my wife got laid off and my contract was up. So like, okay.
What did you figure out what made the guy like this? Was he just, was he a drug addict or an alcoholic?
I'm
he
sure.
Slept all day or partied or what was,
yeah,
what was his
deal? He cleaned
deal?
Carpets for a living, but I'm sure.
Fumes. He was high on fumes.
So I knew he always had liquor in his house. But it was just, like, there was times I remember I worked all day long. I used to work at Starbucks while I was working at this church. And I would open the store. I'd be at work at 4. And then I was working this other job at the church. And so I wouldn't get home until midnight. So this is, like, over a 20-hour day.
Yeah.
And it's 1 a.m. I finally get into bed. And he thought, oh, this would be a great time to practice my electric guitar. Yeah. I mean, he was okay, but 1 a.m. is not the time. Not the time to do that.
Did you try to soothe it over in any way? Like, look, bro, you know, come over, have dinner. We're not bad people or anything like that. Or
not to come over for dinner, but just for 3-4 months, I tried to be the nice guy. But then it just got to the point where I would just had it. Nobody was helping. He was just escalating, being worse and worse. And I was just, you know, he would be loud and I would, you know, pound on the wall or stomp on the floor and just got any better. I mean, I probably could have done more to make it better,
yeah,
but eventually just got to the point where I had enough.
That's the problem with apartment living.
Yes.
Then, and I tell that to everybody. I lived in one apartment. I think it was one, pretty much. I'm pretty sure it's one. Mm-hmm. No, two in my life because I don't want to deal with that. I always hear with it. And even the first, when I moved to L.A., and I was basically living on the floor with a mattress and a TV, and my neighbor came over, hey, could you turn that down? We're not running a juke joint here. Juke joint. And I was like, I'm watching TV. I mean, is your headboard against my wall or something?
Right.
And we kind of had a running feud, but not like yours.
Yeah,
But my son, who lives in an apartment now, is talking about he's constantly having the noise that keeps the kids awake, or the neighbor that smokes pot, now it comes in through the porch now.
We had that in our last apartment, but they were very nice about it because my wife was pregnant at the time, and so I went and talked to him and said, hey, guys, would you mind not doing it until after such and such time? And they agreed to it, and like the last apartment we were in, out of all the apartments, because we probably lived in half a dozen or so, the last one we lived in was actually the best one neighbor-wise.
Yeah.
And like we had people living next to us where we shared a wall with my kid's bedroom, and whenever the parents were gone, the 15-year-old son would crank up the sound system, either crank music or watch a loud movie. And this would start like at 8:30 as we're trying to put the kids to bed.
Right.
But I'd go over and knock on the door, and he was very, oh, okay, I'm sorry. But if it was like in the afternoon, we knew the parents were home, we would just either go in a different part of an apartment or just leave and let him have his.
Well, you've never lived in one of those apartment complexes where it's basically almost like a roach motel. The kids are crawling in the parking lot. Hey, get off my car. You know, and then they're, you know, like just – I can't live like this,
right?
You know,
like when that was our only living situation, I said I will take a second job so we don't have to do that.
Yeah, because the apartment complex where my son is now, a neighbor, one of his neighbors, got their car jacked up because kids were playing around the car, and it was like, "Hey, get away from my car!" So, well, no one's looking. You know, it's like, that's part of apartment life. You know, I couldn't and wouldn't ever want to live like that. I'd rather overpay.
I had some fear of that, so I would always park at a different building so nobody would know which one was my car. Yep. I'd go for a walk. I'd park like three buildings over.
So now I was on your show earlier, the Angie Austin show, and you guys were talking about how your wife would love to get rid of everything and live in a smaller place.
Yes, so we already live in a pretty
small. You already live in a smaller place than what I'm saying. Yeah. What is her visualization of a smaller place?
Well, one of those like tiny houses that seems to be a hot topic, especially here in Denver, Denver and Colorado, saying that you can't live full-time in a tiny house or an RV. It's been a thing that in the Senate over the past couple weeks, but She like there's tiny houses that are, we live in a house that right now I think is barely 1,000 square feet.
Yeah, and I've seen the shows with tiny houses where they're like a sliver of a house, but they're high and
right.
and it's all laid out right. This is the kitchen, but it's also our living room, but the bed pulls down here. And
yes, exactly.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, kind of yeah. And that just like, makes me claustrophobic because, like I said, I'm not a little fella. And just looking at this show just makes me claustrophobic. And my wife's like, hey, it's the home show. You want to go down and look at the tiny houses? Like, how many languages do I have to learn to say no?
No. Nada. Zip. Yeah. Because my girlfriend has mentioned the same sort of thing to me mm-hmm. is like, you know, because I don't want to say I live too big, but I have a house, right. you know. And she's like, why don't we just downsize? You know, she goes, I would love to live in like a remodeled Airstream. Like she's seen those shows mm-hmm. where people turn like an Airstream into a home. And she goes, that's all you need is just the two of us. But I know you couldn't do it because you wouldn't have a place for all your stuff. But who wants to live like that?
I know, exactly.
Who wants to live with two mugs, two forks?
Yes.
The dish you have to wash every night before you eat?
Yep, yep.
Who wants to live like that?
My wife's like, you need to watch this video. And there's this video of a lady who lives in a tiny house like this, but it's also, she has this compost thing, and that's where her bodily waste goes in. And she says, see this mason jar? This is my trash for the year. Because she recycles everything and only buys recyclable or compostable products and blah, 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 blah. And I just, again, say, how many times do I have to say?
Let me ask you something. Does that bitch seem happy?
I don't know.
People live
probably,
like that.
Probably
are they
on
really
drugs?
Happy?
You know, some people are. I probably couldn't, but my wife's like, you don't know. I'm like, well, if we get in that situation, there's no way to get out.
Does it appear to you sometimes, though, if you look at something like that, that dirty people are happy?
Yes.
Do you ever look at like
that's why I haven't showered.
Like
in 3 years.
That live in teepees, they seem a little dirty, but they're kind of like, I'm happy.
There's also
I mean?
This thing called marijuana.
But doesn't it, you know, when I look around, like I go to Boulder or something, you go, oh, that dirty hippie seems really happy.
Right.
And I hate to say the term dirty hippie,
yeah.
but it's, there's something about cleanliness takes space, maybe. Mm-hmm. Is that what it is?
I guess so. I don't know. I mean,
I guess you could be dirty and live in a house, but
right.
it just seems to me that those ones that I know I live and that we only eat cultured eggs that I make myself, and this is my compost jar, and this is my urine goes in this jar, and you know, like
yeah.
you just seem like dirty people to me.
Well, to do stuff like that, it's like I already have 2 full-time jobs. Doing that always, it seems like it's going to be another full-time job. I just want to, you know, consume the product and throw the stuff away. I don't want to be able to have
we
to.
We are
like,
a consumer society.
Yeah, I, you know, we recycle, and I'm like, that's good enough. I can recycle. I can,
yes.
you know.
I have a recycled tub. Plastic bottles go in there.
Yes.
Cans go in there. I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But to read things and this the packaging on this can be used for, like, that's a lot of work.
Right, exactly. And, you know, sometimes I'll look on the Pinterest, and I'll see things that might be cool, like decorations.
Did you
or
just say on the Pinterest?
On the Pinterest, yes. Just to get their eyes out of you. Because, you know, it's like the Facebook and
the
Twitter.
Facebook, yeah.
So
you look at things on Pinterest.
On Pinterest to be able to, like, oh, we can make that as a craft for the kids, or, you know, this would be a cool decoration. Because I used to work with inner city youth,
yeah.
and that would be my job. And sometimes it just, you know, oh, that'd be fun to do, and like, oh, that'd be cool, and just see different things. Like, I like finding something that's cool. Like, oh, how can I deconstruct that and be able to make it myself? Like, can I mentally break it down and be
yeah.
able to build it? Like, I saw something. I was a birthday gift from my wife back in January. She wanted a picture frame, like one of those collage picture frames.
Uh-huh.
But I had over 2,000 photos on my computer, and I'm like, but only 8. And I was looking on Amazon trying to figure out what can I do, and then there's this thing of kind of like strings, like a clothesline for your pictures.
Yeah, clips.
Yeah.
yeah.
And so I found one that I liked, and I kind of mentally deconstructed it, and then I made it 3 times bigger and put it in our bedroom, and it was a huge surprise, and we have like 200 photos on the wall that can easily be changed out.
Oh, very, very nice.
And so it's,
I repurpose stuff a lot. Mm-hmm. I like doing this stuff. Like I took an old door from like the 1880s,
oh.
and it's on my wall as art.
Oh, okay.
And I've kind of put fake flowers through it where it comes out the broken glass. It still has the glass.
Oh, cool.
Like it's kind of this stuff growing on the wall, but it's actually an old door.
Nice.
And people say, did you get that idea off Pinterest? No, I did not. Right. But I know now because I've Googled. People do that. They're taking windows and right. turning them into things. And
but there's one thing I've seen talking about old doors is you put it horizontally, and especially the door that has the glass panes, and you can use it as a picture frame.
I put just pictures behind the glass yeah. and stuff like that.
And we had some friends cool. up in Wyoming that did that. But, oh, that's a very cool thing.
Well, talking of doors, I actually saw – I was at an antique flea market one day, and somebody had taken several old doors to make their booth.
Oh.
They had put them together to make their booth. And I thought, I want to make my studio for the podcast out of doors. I kind of had this vision of going and collecting doors and just building like a little square box out of the old doors.
And making your own
– like a soundproof kind of little studio out
Very
of
cool.
old doors.
Well, have you ever been to – there's like – I forget the name of the store right now. But like there's places that have doors and doors and doors.
Called Doors and Doors.
Doors and Doors. But it's like run through the Habitat for Humanity, and there's like you can get all sorts of doors that you want. And
do they like go get them out of old houses and buildings?
Old houses
like
are
that?
Donated, and like they also have some couches and other appliances.
Appliances. Yeah. Yeah, there's a place down in Colorado Springs called I think it's called The Barn.
The Barn.
And they have a lot of stuff on their back lot, like old doors, old fences, old gates.
Oh.
There's a lot of stuff.
Gates would be cool.
Yeah. And the lady said a lot of people buy old gates to make headboards. They take they put the old metal gate up above their bed, and then they could decorate that. And I'm like, God, that's a cool repurposing idea.
That is cool to make that a headboard. I like that idea.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's something I may want to end up doing. But I don't think I could live in the tiny, tiny houses.
Yeah, I can't even wrap my mind around it. Watching these YouTube videos or even the thing that's on Netflix now just makes me so claustrophobic I can't even stand it.
Do you ever think about purging your house and starting over? And by this, I mean, I had this thought the other day, like most of my stuff I've collected all my life. You know, like this
– Oh, the Restore. It's called the Restore. I couldn't think of it.
Oh, the one you were talking about with all the doors and stuff?
The Restore.
But I was saying, it's taken all the stuff over the years, the things like, okay, this end table has been with me forever, this nightstand I've carried around with me, mm-hmm. you know. And at one point I thought, you know, you start living in the past when you're like that.
Yeah.
Like you're living in a museum of your life. You know what I mean?
Guess, uh-huh.
And I have thought a couple times, like, just starting over, like mm-hmm. – all furniture goes, all pictures off the wall, all everything, because I need to move from this point forward. Does that ever seem like a...
I think, my wife would want to purge everything and not necessarily start over because you're like, oh, well, we have to get new stuff. But she is a decorator and wants to, like, sometimes she'll want to turn her room over, like, oh, we've had this stuff for too long, let's spruce it up, because her mom's the exact same way.
Yeah.
But we have two little kids, so it's kind of hard to do that, like, hey, little fellow, we're throwing all your toys away. Say bye. Yeah. But, you know, being that we've moved a dozen times over the last 9 years, just the purging and the restarting over does kind of happen naturally.
It helps with
that. Yeah. Because we went from a two-bedroom apartment to a house, and we have a big yard and a garage. And when we the last apartment we were in, we had a great little patio, and so I got some patio furniture. But now we have this huge backyard, and so I've been adding to that, and now having a little picnic table for the kids and little lounge chairs for the kids for the patio outside.
Well, my house before the one I lived in now, I was very much into like 1950s decor.
Right.
I was very much into that kind of turquoise and
that's
colors.
That's our dinner table. We have like a 1950s
very cool.
diner style
that is
table.
So cool.
Yeah.
Well, my whole house was decorated like that.
Cool.
I mean, and I would buy like knickknacks from the 1950s for shelves and mm-hmm. lamps and things from the look like space age stuff from the 60s. I was just into that kind of, I guess you call it mid America.
Yeah.
But
now it's called like the rockabilly era.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was into that. But when I moved to my new house, I kind of had this thought in my head, and I was working for the country radio station at the time, that I wanted to model my house after Bonanza. And this is the honest to God truth. I took a picture from the TV show Bonanza, the colors and the way the house was, and I sort of decorated the house with this feel of a 1960s Western.
Oh,
so
cool.
There's a lot of stuff that...
And Janet was down with that?
Well, this was before Janet.
Oh, okay.
And she came along. She actually thought I had a decorator. Because she was like, did you... Who did that? I did. You know, I bought this. I looked at this. I have the eye for the. That doesn't sound very manly on remasculate.
Well, no, I do too, and it boggles my wife's mind. She's like, "What do you mean you don't like it?" I'm like, "Well, the balance is all off. It should be this way." I'm like, "Well, that's not the way I put it together." Well, it's going to be fixed.
Yeah, because these two pictures with that chair, that is not right. That doesn't. So yeah, I'm a lot like that. So, but lately, since I'm not working at the Ray Country radio station anymore, and I really do miss all of that kind of funkiness of that, because I think that's fun. When you decorate too stiff, it kind of feels like get your feet off the couch.
Right.
Don't set the cup there. You know what I mean?
So why do we even have a lawn, Dad?
Right. And my son told me, he goes, I liked your old house because I felt like I was in Pee-wee's Playhouse. Because that's, and I go, you're right. That's kind of the way it was, all bright colors and fun. And
have you seen the new movie on Netflix?
No, I have not. Oh. Is it good?
Well, the first 10 minutes I watched are good.
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
But that's why I was thinking about purging and starting over, because I'm kind of in my head, I've started looking at books and things, and I'm real into like this eclectic. They call it eclectic.
Yes,
now,
yes.
Where it can be anything you want.
I think that's just called hoarding, but they call it eclectic to make it a thing.
Is that what it is?
I guess.
But you've seen it where that's kind of a lot of repurposing.
Yeah, I think eclectic is, you know, hoarding with a purpose.
Hoarding with a purpose. I think we just found the title for this podcast episode.
There you go.
Hoarding with a purpose. So, yeah, that's got me in this I want to do something different mode.
Well, I think you were talking about repurposing earlier. Whenever I find myself doing a project like that, I just feel really good. Like, I posted on my Facebook page the other day, I just did two chores that involved tools. Yippee, I feel like a real man. Or going to Home Depot, I posted, went to Home Depot, found exactly what I was looking for without asking for help.
Ta-da! High five. Now that is remasculated right there. Yeah, don't ever go to one of the places and try to get a key made, though.
Oh, yeah. It takes forever and doesn't always come out right.
The key guy isn't here right now. The key guy. What, the key master? The key master?
When can I get an appointment with this key master?
One key to rule them all. Like, it's just a key. Doesn't anybody know how to work the machine?
Plug it in. I can do it. I've seen the guy do it.
I can
before.
Do it. Just let me have this one that looks like my key off the
hook.
Yeah. Oh, some of the places now I have automated key thing. Have you seen those?
Oh, yeah. The King of Super is by my house.
Does it have that where you just put your key in and you can watch it do all the robotic buff it? And
I don't know how much I would trust it, though, just to see.
I did it.
Yeah, does it work?
Yeah, I did it. Not only did I do it, I had my son with me so I could make him a key. And then he goes, we should probably make one for your sister. Good idea. And we were making, didn't even need to, but we made people keys.
Keys for everybody.
Keys for everybody. Just because we wanted to watch the, do it again. Make it a flame key this time. Because that's the other thing cool about keys is you get all those different keys now. Mm-hmm. They look like sheet metal, or they have flames on them, or they're pirate keys, or they're.
Well, the one key I saw at Walmart last year when I was getting keys made, car key, you know, a little bigger.
Yeah.
But the part where you grip it,
It's
a bottle opener.
What?
That just seems like a bad idea.
No. You're not supposed to drink and drive.
I know, it's a bad idea.
Now, if you could have any key, what would yours be?
Oh, I don't know. Probably the flamey key.
You like,
or a Batman key.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I drive I don't know if I said it on this show with you, but I drive a Mini Cooper.
Oh, yes.
And I didn't know this till the other day when I got mine serviced. They slide the key into a reader.
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Oh, downloads?
Like it downloads into their computer. And I was like, what are you downloading? Is this car information? What's on my information?
Have your mileage?
That's what I was wondering. If it's mileage, last time I was there, does it keep track of the air pressures in the tire or what radio stations I've listened to or how many times I farted in the passenger seat? I mean, you know what I mean? What is actually on that reader?
Because
I'd never noticed that before.
Right. Well, because the Coopers have like the little disc.
Yeah,
it's
a disc
spaceship.
You slide in.
Yep.
Yeah.
I got one as a rental when I took my car in to get service last year.
Yeah. So what are they? Is that like that little round thing? Is that their version of the black box sort of thing?
But
I didn't know dealerships were doing that.
I mean,
I need to Google that. If any of our listeners know what that's about, please let us know. Let me know. Write me at McGrew@MSN.com that you might know what's going on with that little.
Well, when
Mini
you
Cooper
ask, did they not tell you anything?
Huh?
When you ask them,
no,
tell?
He was just very elusive. He goes, "That's just the info. It's how we keep track of things, and you know, like what things do I have to keep? You know, I felt like my kid. What? Why? Why? Why did you do that? Why? What's it show? Why?
Yeah, right. What next?
Oh, is there anything that is on your mind since you, the show you do is very straight laced and forward. And I know there's things you think of that you can't talk about on your show. So what thing lately has been on your mind that they said, we probably shouldn't talk about that on this show?
Oh, I don't know. I think there's like hot topics that sometimes are skated over because the show is so clean of, you know, gay lesbian rights and all sorts of, just because it's, I say that, you know, my wife and I talk about it quite often because her brother-in-law or her brother and sister-in-law have varying views on it. It just makes for good topics. And I think, oh, I wish I could talk about that on air, but I can't.
Why do you think they shoot stuff like that down as long as you're talking about it in a context of this relates to the show or to the way people feel about it?
Certain listeners, sponsors, and hosts may not like it, may not feel comfortable about it. And so I just, you know, got to get pushed by the wayside. Because sometimes if it's not squeaky clean, if it's controversial in some aspects, then it
But that makes for good radio. That makes people like that's the stuff you go, we'll be talking about lesbian rights tomorrow and how it pertains to the Bible. Mm-hmm. You're telling me people wouldn't be tuning in tomorrow?
Right. Well, you got to have a host that will want to talk about that. And so I just need my own show. And I've talked about wanting to have my own show, and I would call it What the Father.
Uh-huh.
But the general manager told me no. I couldn't call
WTF.
It.
WTF?
Yeah. So maybe I'll just have to have my own podcast.
Well, so what is your take on the whole deal with North Carolina and their so-called, and I'll use the hand quotes here, bathroom?
Well, I don't know, because it's such a sticky situation. And I got to think, I'm cool with it, whatever. But then I have to think.
You want a man in the bathroom with your daughter?
Well, then that's the next thing. Well, what about that? That's my next thing of like, well, that's where I'm not comfortable with it. Because if it's me, sure, whatever. But it's with my daughter, then it's a different...
Yeah, and I don't understand why people want to push this. I have gay friends, of course, because I'm in the entertainment business. Mm-hmm. I have gay relatives. Everybody does.
Yep.
But I don't understand why people want to push so hard to dismantle a society. Because it's so obvious that, you know, err on the side of caution. Because it's what you identify with, not what you have. Well, do you know what I mean? Like... I identified as a woman. Well, you don't look like one. You don't act like one.
Right. What is your genetic marker?
Right. And so do you see what I'm saying? I don't want to be – I'm not against these people, but I am against them not understanding. Yeah, I understand your point.
Yeah.
I understand how that could open the door for a pervert. I'm not one. I'm not saying anybody is. But you see what I'm saying? Like how come they don't have as much of that common sense of saying, I don't want to push this to the limit that somebody might get hurt?
Exactly. And there's going to be that one point, and then it's going to, you know, the levee's going to break.
Yeah.
Something is going to happen somewhere.
Yeah. And the whole thing, like Bruce Springsteen drove me crazy, and I posted it on Facebook. Like, he canceled his show because he wants to stand behind. Then stop selling your music in Egypt where gays are killed.
Yes.
You know, these kind of to me, that's just linear common sense that people go, they're cheering Bruce. Okay, but he's not really doing anything.
Right.
Maybe ticket sales weren't good.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to be using this as a publicity stunt.
Right, you got to do.
If you're going to do this, do it across the board. If you're going to take a stance, say, I will not play a concert in any country that women are mistreated.
Right. And, you know, but then somebody's going to find something wrong with that. Like we talked about on my show, the Jim Gaffigan ad.
Yeah.
It's like, it's too white.
Too white.
Well, it's like, well, what can you do
to
make it better?
Jim Gaffigan's family is white.
Yes.
So that's what is in the commercial.
Yeah. And just to, you know, be all inclusive. It's like, well, you can't. You just can't be all inclusive with everything always.
When do we start teaching that again? Because I think that's what got out of point. We've got so out of hand with inclusion, diversity, anything. There's nothing wrong. Who are you to judge? Blah, 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 blah.
Right. It's like, you're okay, I'm okay, but we're not.
But we're not. We're really not.
Right.
So when do we flip it back to, you know what? We really just need to get back to some good old common sense.
I think that's going to be an uphill journey because it seemed like with the whole Caitlyn Jenner thing, this whole thing just exploded around the same time as that. Whereas like the slow uphill battle, and then all of a sudden this gay lesbian rights went up, just exploded when that whole thing came up as a platform for like she kind of was the
yeah. Because everything you hear now is it LBTG or LBGT, whatever. I don't even know anymore. Too many letters. You know, RSVP. I don't know.
It seemed like for a while, just like, you know, slow incline. And then all of a sudden, the past, 2 years has just exploded. And now it's elevated so huge. And to be able to go back to, you know, common sense, like what you're talking earlier, it's people are so high and living in the clouds, it's going to be that, you know, slow decline back into being able to have that understanding.
Will it be that decline back to it, or will it just be a decline to a slippery slope to disaster? Well, see what I mean?
I think we're already on that slope.
The slope to disaster?
Yeah.
In a way, I do too, because I was talking to the girlfriend the other day who is in HR, and I won't say her company, but they are having real trouble with millennials in the workplace.
Right. Of not
wanting to show up, calling in sick, not wanting the job. Why haven't I gotten a raise? You've only been here 3 months.
Right.
Like there's a whole thing of a generation that's just messed up.
Mm-hmm.
So, but thanks for doing my show.
Oh,
I appreciate it.
Thanks for doing my show.
We're recording in your studio, and I know you have an actual show you need to do.
I do.
So,
some of us have to work around.
Yeah. So tell everybody how to find you and the show that you work on.
The show I work on, it's Angie Austin's Good News. So you can always go to AngieAustinRadio.com. And then, I'm part of that if you want to get a hold of me there. Or also, I DJ.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's partyprodjs.com. So check me out there too.
All right. Well, Moose, thanks for doing the show. I appreciate it.
Yay.
Until next time, God bless America. Go listen to some Oak Ridge Boys. I bid you adieu.
Adieu.
In the basement of the mud flap house, flapping and poo, and they're under with the rings and noose, and poo licks herself, and flap contemplates manly things. He thinks about guns and trucks and stooges three, men and boys, and that doesn't sound right. He thinks about booze and bacon and power tools. Come with me, let your mask you leave. Oh, won't you come with me?